Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. I listened to your program and something is full of information and then something is getting the entertainment aspect of it as well. So when I heard your first three callers, you know, that's the entertainment part. When I hear Manny Wesley coming through and then the battle between yourself and Wesley. Wesley is a good part of my St. Thomas boys together, you know. But it's also entertainment, you know. Anyhow, I just want to deal with a situation here as well. Your opening remarks were quite interesting on the whole pandemic that is going and how people look at it from various levels, the authorities and the journalists and that sort of thing. But I also want to make a slight look into it and also involve cricket into it as well. I was reading a book this weekend and I saw a definition of hope. And this hope, it says that hope is being able to see that there is light despite all the darkness. And we are going through a period of darkness now in Barbados, in the Caribbean, and in the wider world as well, because we are struck with this pandemic that has decimated our tourist industry. It has caused failures in business, a lot of sickness, and there's a lot of death, though we haven't had much death here. But it's also bring a lot of pressure on the healthcare professionals and the institutions as well. Employment is, you know, pretty high. And then there's this thing called depression and sadness, which has enveloped the whole society. Our society here, no. You're having a lot of people complaining of finding it difficult to get through. And then the government have got to be able to provide things, the care packages and all that sort of thing. And there's a lot of darkness in the society. But I'm asking people to have some hope. And it's sort of difficult to be able to tell people to have hope when they see all this darkness. But hope is, and light is at the end of the tunnel. And I go right back to what happened to us just this weekend, Sunday. You know, the West Indies team now is in Bangladesh. And, you know, they're playing through a pandemic as well. And all of us who are cricket lovers, you know, sort of scream at the idea of the West Indies going to Bangladesh because we're going to be annihilated, we're going to be beaten. And when the brighter guys, the stars are not playing, we're not available for one reason or the other. And we carried what people would call a second stream team. And then we were also decimated in the 3-1 days, you know. But hear this, you know, the guys came to the fore. We were playing in Bangladesh a spinner's wicket. We were playing to a team that is rated maybe a little higher than us. And, you know, we came in here 4 days down. We were down, but we bounced back on the fifth day, remarkably. And to beat Bangladesh, when it looked as though there was no hope for us, it was darkness all along, decimated in the 3-1 days, coming back to play this test cricket, and we were looking down. But then, you know, these youngsters with no test experience stood up and won this test match. Remarkable. And I want to pay a special tribute here. I wrote a poem here to the guy, Kyle Mears, and I'll go through it very quickly here.
How long is this poem, may I ask?
It's going to be about maybe 45 seconds.
Okay.
And it's a tribute to Kyle Mears. Test cricket, they say, is dying. Whoever say it is lying. Other forms of cricket have come along. But please don't bury test cricket underground. Its format is longer than the rest. That's why it's designated as test. Character and skills are necessary because you're in a 5-day journey. Every player immaculately attired in white. Two teams engaging in a big fight, a real battle for supremacy. Each team wants to get a victory. Imagine 395 to win in a final innings. Kyle Mears and Nkrumah Bonner are batting. The opposition with the world's best spinners aiming to make their team the winners. But a young debutant had another view. Sixes and fours, he took a few. His century came and then another one. By then, Nkrumah Bonner had gone. Kyle made a record-breaking 210. It's never been done in the second innings. First time in the history of the game, that's where he will stamp his name. The debutant remained at the wicket. Yes, he was playing test cricket. Today, we shower him with praise. That cricketer name is Kyle Mears. That's the end of it. So in the face of darkness, let's reach out for some hope. because there is still hope. Now, you want the Caribbean people, Barbadian people to look. The pandemic will come and it will go like others have gone before. So we've got to put emphasis on this hope.
How long? I wonder how long it took us to see this kind of performance in West Indies cricket. 30-something years?
Well, 48, because 48 years, yeah. I think it was.
It's been a long time. Okay.
And we're deserving of it.
You can live in hope, but you see, while the grass is growing, the horse is starving. Okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir. Caswell Franklin has joined us. And the question is why? Just unmute your microphone, because it is muted. Yes, sir.
Good morning, David. And I was trying to stay away from programs and controversy and all kind of stuff. I just wanted a little peace. But it's going to be very difficult for me to stay at peace when people are calling me every day complaining about their plight. My most recent addition have been a number of nurses who seem to be dissatisfied with the representation that they're getting, and they have now turned to me, David, and I was shocked by the complaints, because yes, I'm in industrial relations, I deal with people, but some of the conditions that nurses are working under in Barbados, most people in Barbados would churn. And they work and work hard under these conditions, hoping for better. But COVID and the hazard allowance has been like the straws that brought the camel back. Because hazard allowance that many nurses walk off recently, it was not the major issue in nursing. We had a situation where the government acknowledged that nurses should be given hazard allowance, but they could only give it to one set of nurses, nurses at the QEH. The QEH was supposed to be insulated from this COVID thing. They are not now, because it is rampant at that place. And
when you say rampant, what do you mean?
I don't
want
to
use that term.
Yeah, because it's taking over wards at the hospital now, at least two that I know of. And initially, they were telling the nurses, you are low risk, so you don't have to be tested. Now they found out otherwise, that they're not low risk. I mean, the nurses have come down.
The nurses actually bought that notion that they were low risk in the QEH?
No, but they weren't testing.
I mean, that's amazing.
You know?
Right, but let me be honest with you, Caswell. Nurses are among those on the front line. Doctors too. And therefore, if you're working in a situation where you recognize that you're on the front line, isn't it in your interest to press for the testing that was required?
I would have thought so. And they were pressing for the test, but you can't make them do it. And when you do finally get the test, they tell you, go and work. Because, you know, they send them, they actually test nurses and send them back to work. And then some of these same nurses came down positive. Mind you, I know patients are positive. There's one case where a patient was in hospital for 2 weeks and got exposed in the hospital because they didn't come in with COVID. As a matter of fact, nobody should have been coming into the hospital with COVID, because St. Lucie was reserved for that. That's why they isolated the hospital. But it finally infiltrated the hospital, and I don't think they're well prepared for it, and they're messing up.
But the hospital has done a very good job of telling us how many people who work there have actually got COVID, had tested positive. The unspoken word is, what about patients in the hospital? The degree to which they have actually found themselves with patients who tested positive after they were treated at the hospital, the procedure for trying to ensure that patients who are coming in are actually tested. But this is where the real difficulty arises. If a person is really ill and goes into the hospital and is tested, you want to get those results back quickly. But if you have to deal with the backlog and the delay that we have been seeing in the system, then it stands to reason that doctors may have to take action before they can actually get those results. So all of this is playing out in an environment where we are supposed to protect the hospital, say very little about what has been happening there, buy into the statements that are being put out by the hospital authorities, while on the ground, you and I know what the failings of the testing have been doing, not only to that to them, but to the country as a whole. So that's how it is. So yeah. What impact then is that having on the nurses who are calling you?
The nurses have been, as I told you, they were tested and sent back to work. It turns out now that some of them were not as low risk as the authorities were saying. They end up positive. And as a result, now they would be infecting other people, patients, and other nurses. You cannot, they're telling people who work in stores and wherever else, if you are tested, stay home. They're not doing it for government workers. They certainly didn't do it for prisons. They certainly are not doing it for people in the hospital.
So from the point of view of a trade unionist, what is your recommendation, therefore?
I will tell people there is a piece of legislation called the Safety and Health at Work Act, where you can refuse dangerous work. Now, you know COVID is dangerous. There's no question about it. And if you are in a position where you are saying that I can be exposed to this thing, they're not giving them the necessary protective gear. And even though you have protective gear, you might still get infected, but then you don't get it at all. Some nurses are telling me they're giving them two single masks for our shift. And now they're now suggesting to the other nurse at Geriatric Hospital that they should work for 12 hours.
We're hearing
12 hours on, 12 hours off.
We are hearing that nurses are approaching you to possibly represent them as a union. Is that correct?
Well, that is correct. I've had meetings with them, and, well, mind you, on Zoom, because, you know, unions are not considered essential, so we can't open our offices, but I do my business on Zoom here from my living room. And yes, there are lots of queries and there are lots of people who actually filled out forms, but they won't be going in any hurry now because I'm not taking them into any government department. I'm not leaving home unless I have to. But the problem here is that they are not getting the kind of representation they say from either of the unions that represented them previously, the Nursing Association or the National Union of Public Workers. And they have asked me if I would help. And of course, I'm ready, willing, and able.
What's your next step, therefore?
My next step would be to consolidate, to make sure I see how many I have. And not that I wouldn't, if I have one nurse, I wouldn't start work on her behalf, but I want to see what we're doing. I will meet with the nurses and get instructions from them, because I am not a union boss. Like people like to say, I am a general secretary of a union who work for people that pay me. Now, if you pay me, I can't be the boss. They are the bosses, so I will have to get instructions from them. And as we speak now, David, they are actually sending me messages on my phone on our WhatsApp. You know, Lord, boy, so many have come true. You know, they're asking about hazard allowance. They're asking about qualifications, people not paying for their qualifications. They're asking about the regional exam. And mind you, sir, I would like to talk about that too, because I spoke about that in the Senate. We have a situation in Barbados where nurses go to the community college and taught everything they need to know to be a nurse in Barbados. But we have this system where if you want to work in the Caribbean, you have to do this regional exam. So you do this exam up to last year, there was no syllabus really. You just had to do this exam. And there was no, the Bajan nurses, didn't know what was going to be on the exam. They didn't know what they were going to be tested on. And a lot of people failed. Not that we have foolish nurses. It's just that nobody was taught anything to do with the revision of the exam. I suggested that nurses were trained in Barbados for Barbados. You know, if you want to work outside of Barbados, yes, do the regional. But we are trained by the community college to work in Barbados. And they have taken those nurses and not allowed them to be registered nurses. And then you're bringing in nurses. Because, but I'm sure that if we had allowed the nurses that were trained and fully trained at community college to work in their field, we weren't going to be bringing Cubans or anybody else. The Cubans, they didn't do the regional exam. The Ghanaians didn't do the regional exam. The Cubans don't speak English. And the Ghanaians, some of them speak not, they don't speak good enough English for Bajans. So they still have to rely on the Bajan nurses. Mind you, they are being paid higher than the Bajan nurses. Bajan nurses start at the bottom of the scale and they start at the top. So the
I get complaints to the effect that some of the Ghanaian nurses are seeing hell because for whatever reason, the claim is that the Barbadian nurses are hostile to them.
Well, I haven't. I'm representing Barbadian nurses, and they're not going to complain to me and tell them that they're being hostile to Ghanaian nurses. So I've not had that complaint. Mm. And I've had none of Ghanaian nurses have joined with me. So I don't know that you would. You better be able to talk about that than me. I don't know of it. Mm. I can only tell you about the things that I see in here. You know, and like I keep on going through my list. They said they speak to need for insurance. Nurses don't have insurance. You know, they're talking about working in an environment that is free from fungus.
They have a long list of complaints that they seem to have. And as you are suggesting, some are of the view that they are not getting the representation needed. But let me come back to the complaints about the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. There's a report here which has been sent to me, which was issued by the executive chair of the hospital. And in part, it says, as expected, community spread has impacted the QEH. We prepare for the possibility of COVID patients being diagnosed on the ward, and all department heads have been reviewing and implementing their contingency plans developed last year. As of February 4th, 2021, the number of staff testing positive has moved from 10 to 19 in a staffing complement of 2,300. Contact tracing and risk stratification has been ongoing in the various departments affected. The new staff cases continue to show evidence of staff contact with community cases, and we have not confirmed any staff-to-staff spread. Two staff cases are still under investigation by the contact tracing team. We understand that many staff members will have fears and concerns over encounters with patients who are COVID positive, and resources are available to support you, but compliance with PPE and guidelines are critical. We have noticed that in some areas, there's been a lack of compliance with PPE guidelines established by the QEH. Many departments have shown great resilience in the face of exposure. Therefore, compliance with PPE has been proven to make encounters low risk for staff. I think that's what it should read. Many staff have tested negative after a case has occurred in the department. All staff members are reminded to comply with these guidelines, which have been put in place to protect us, our families, colleagues, communities, and country. The entire staff is reminded to use the PPE available. We, along with other health institutions, will benefit from compliance officers who will be visiting institutions to monitor compliance with institutional policies. You are reminded to again familiarize yourself with the mandatory mask wearing policy, the staff exposure policy, and departmental contingency plans. All can be acquired, if misplaced, from the help desk or our departmental managers. So that's part of this report, which has been made available. And I suppose it says the extent to which the Queen Elizabeth Hospital leadership is trying its best to contain this problem. you speak on behalf of the nurses who you say are feeling vulnerable. In that context also, though, let me tell you that there's some people out there who one person says that they can't understand how people who sign up to be doctors and nurses can then feel that there's so much risk that they shouldn't see sick people. Humanity and those in healthcare have always had to live with the risk of infection. How do you see that?
David, nurses' job by definition is hazardous. But sometimes you do not have to allow people to get into hazardous situations by just providing the necessary equipment and the necessary condition. Like, for instance, you said to the nurses or to the people of Barbados that if you are tested, you should stay home. All the nice PR that the hospital is giving you there and that thing that you just read, it isn't applying at the hospital. They're testing nurses and sending them right back. You're swabbing them and sending them back to work. And then when you find out later on that they are positive, those nurses, God knows, could have affected several more people and then their families. So while and mind you, this is not only hospital, this is government at large. We have all these public relations, press conferences and stuff that I try not to listen to anymore. They are saying one thing, but other things are happening. They had it in the prisons, and now it is that they didn't learn from the prison experience. And you hear the people at the authorities saying, people are eager to work and everything's back to normal, but it is not true. The day when they said that people were eager to work, they got 37 sick certificates that same day. And then it went up to 115 2 days later. And they were saying, people are eager to work. They're telling you these things, but you have traumatized prison officers, people who are still getting nightmares, people who are seeing psychiatrists now as a result of what they did to them in the prison. And now they want to do the same thing to nurses. They are proposing to nurses right now at the geriatric hospital that they work 12 hours. And then they bus them to a hotel. They stay at the hotel. They don't have any contact with their families. And then they come back the next 12 hours later to start another shift for 2 weeks. And they understand there have been threats to some of the nurses telling them if they don't accept it, they will be transferred. Well, I said to them, transfer them then, because they're not working it. They're not working it. And they're not going to, if the nurses are tested and they're proved to be positive, then you do what you have to do with them. If they are negative, you protect them. You give them the necessary equipment. People are talking about PPE. We talk, but we don't do. I go back to the prison. You know, at the prison, when they locked down the prison, they told prison officers, you come in to be tested. Many of them are in short pants and sandals because they were off duty, just going to get tested, and they locked the door behind them. Men were, and they were prisoners in their own prison. But they didn't bring in sanitizer, they didn't bring in detergent. You hear the prisoners saying they didn't have toilet paper. You know, they carry them body bags, though. And so they're telling the public one thing, but they are not telling the truth. We have a PR campaign. We have the lady that we are calling ambassador. She's not an ambassador in Barbados, mind you. That's not, you're not an ambassador in your own country. Ask Glenn Clark. Government, and you do this nice PR thing, but the PR is not necessarily the truth. They're skimming the truth and they're telling people what they want them to hear. I understand they might not want to panic the society, but because they're not panicking the society, people still not believing what they're saying because they can see gaps in what they're saying. Tell the truth. We are not idiots.
All right, Caswell, just hold on just in case there's any further response to you, and I will continue with the program, but you can stand by just in case something of relevance comes for your input. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program. Sorry to keep you waiting. Hello.
Hello,